We've been talking about Norway's growing secularization, its rising humanist movement, and the changing role of what was once the official state religion, Evangelical Lutheranism. And that got us thinking. Given the long, significant role of Evangelical Lutheranism in Norwegian culture, did any of that influence make its way over to the United States by way of Norwegian immigrants? And how did that help shape the American religious landscape? It turns out it was pretty significant. To get some context, we turn to Marvin Slind, Professor Emeritus of History at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. He says a majority of Norwegian immigrants came to the United States between 1865 and 1925, attracted by incredibly inexpensive land available in the Midwest following the Homestead Act and the westward expansion of railroads. Most ended up in places like North Dakota, Minnesota, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Iowa, as well as in Washington State. But he says this majority of Norwegian immigrants were preceded by another group in 1825, made up of Norwegian Quakers and a group of religious dissidents known as Hauge Lutherans.
They were followers of Hans Nielsen Hauge, and he was one who spoke out starting in the late 1700s, was a critic of what he considered the excessive rationalism of the state church. It was, at that time, Norway was still part of Denmark. They were part of Denmark until 1814. And all of the university-trained pastors were all trained down at the University of Copenhagen until the University of Oslo was founded in 1811. And this was very much caught up in the Enlightenment and rationalism and all of this. And Hauge said, the church doesn't represent faith anymore. It's just a dead institution that goes through the motions of having all of these rituals and masses and vestments and all kinds of things, which he said are clear evidence that there's no Holy Spirit involved here. It's simply a dead church. And so he started this revival of pietism, of involving the laity, and this came right at a critical time because during the Napoleonic era, all of the monarchs in Europe were frightened to death of anything that smacked of revolution, because 1792, Louis XVI had been executed. You had the fall of the monarchy, and monarchies threatened all of Europe. So anything that threatened the state was viewed as potential revolution. Hauge was critical of the church. It was a state church. Therefore, he was critical of the state. Therefore, he had to be stopped. And he spent over a decade in prison for just preaching, saying that you could have meetings of small groups of people without a pastor there, and that this was a more genuine religious feeling. And that movement spread, particularly in Western Norway, which coincided where the poorest farmland was. It coincided that there were this strong sentiment of Haugeism, as it came to be known, the teachings of Hans Nielsen Hauge, came to the same area where, at the beginning, the largest percentage of immigrants came from.
And so then later on, what was the faith tradition that was being brought with immigrants?
Almost all of them were Lutheran. But that's where it gets tricky because, first of all, the state church tried to discourage people from leaving. They called them disloyal subjects of the king. And so they tried to stop them from going. And by the 1840s, it was clear that the genie was out of the bottle. They weren't going to be able to keep people from going. And then they very quickly realized they weren't going to have enough pastors to service the flocks, or because they were going to be too dispersed. They tried, starting in the late 1840s and really early in the 1850s, sending over a few Norwegian ministers, and they wanted to just simply replicate the Norwegian state church here. And that didn't fly with the immigrants because the Hauge people were critical of the state church, and they said, we don't want a state church over here. And so very soon the organization that was founded by these university-trained pastors from Norway basically started to chafe the rank and file who wanted something that fit the new world. And they started something it became known as the Norwegian Synod. And it was led by the university-trained professors, three or four of them came over in the early 1850s. And they founded this organization, and it was going to have a strict church organization over the top. And they realized they couldn't provide enough pastors from Norway, so they wanted to get a seminary started. But until they could do that, they used the German Lutheran seminary down in St. Louis, what would become known as the Missouri Synod. And the problem was Missouri was a slave state, and the Norwegian immigrants hated the institution of slavery. They thought it was completely wrong. That's one of the reasons there were so few Norwegian immigrants who came to the South. Well, the seminary down in St. Louis said slavery may be a terrible institution, but in a strict biblical sense, and they used very precise wording, they said it is not in and of itself a sin. And that's simply a theological issue. Well, that didn't fly well with the rank and file. And they said, we're not going to send our students to this seminary anymore. We need to have our own. And that's why they established first the college where I taught before I retired. Luther College was founded in 1861 as an institution to train people for the seminary. And they also founded Luther Seminary, which is now in St. Paul. It was a couple other places before. And then in the 1870s, down at that seminary in St. Louis, there was a dispute over the interpretation of predestination, which is not usually a Lutheran issue. But so there was a split grew up, and the old guard leadership of the Norwegian Synod sided with the people of Missouri, and one side was calling the others heretics, and the other was calling them crypto-Calvinists and all kinds of things. And that split lasted from the 1870s until 1912, when there was an agreement, and both sides said, well, yeah, we understand what you were saying. There was misunderstanding, and you're not wrong, and we're not wrong, and everything was basically smoothed over. That was only possible after all of the old guard leadership had all died off by that time. And part of it was a resentment of that leadership. Younger pastors trained in the United States who were, you know, maybe farmers or their parents were businessmen or something. They weren't this university elite that had led it before. So there was kind of almost a populist reaction to the leadership.
Obviously, there were other immigrant groups that were bringing forms of Lutheranism and different forms of Protestantism into the U.S. Could you put the Norwegian contribution into context in the formation of American Protestantism?
The Norwegian impact on the Lutheran Church is probably greater than any of the. There were Lutheran Germans, there were Danes and Swedes and Norwegians, but no group really identified so much with Lutheranism as the Norwegians did. And then gradually, after the old guard died and they had this compromise in 1912, there were a handful of synods that had formed together, and it was called the United Church, and there was a Hauge Synod, and then there was the Norwegian Synod. They all merged in 1917. And then that stayed until 1961, where they merged with some other ones, and then finally they merged in the 80s into what's now the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. But the Norwegian component of that had a really strong influence on it. It was only starting in the 80s that the Lutheran Church began to kind of, in some ways, look upon itself kind of embarrassing. Well, not everybody is Norwegian Lutheran anymore. And I remember in the 80s, what was then the ALC came, it was before the merger to the ELCA, they came out with a new hymnal. And the introduction of it, they said, this hymnal is based on the recognition that the average American no longer considers him or herself a transplanted European, or words to that effect. And suddenly, all of a sudden, many of the old Norwegian hymns had been replaced in the hymnal, and all of a sudden, with good reason, a lot of hymns from other traditions were included. But it was kind of a shock for many raised in what was essentially a Norwegian Lutheran church to suddenly be singing, Rayfun Williams-based hymns, for example, rather than something from Scandinavia.
What was kind of the breakdown between the Helge Lutherans and the more traditional Lutherans among Norwegian immigrants who were here in the States?
The Helge people were a minority, but their influence kind of permeated every organization that they merged with. And so they merged with the Norwegian Synod in 1917. And that influence is going to make what had been the Norwegian Synod much more conservative. And that Hauge influence wasn't just in terms of pietism and lay preaching, because one of the things on the frontier situation, all these scattered communities couldn't have a single pastor, and so they had to rely on lay preaching. And so that was one way that became a necessity, accepted by the church hierarchy. But in Norway, the Hauge Synod had railed against the state church. Come to America, there's no state church to be criticizing, but they looked around them and they saw dance halls and beer parlors and the like, and they were a traditionally conservative group to begin with, and became even more so, strongly temperance-oriented, no dancing, no drinking. So there were all of these really kind of puritanical social strictures that were kind of brought into the structure of the Lutheran Church with the Norwegian influences on it.
Well, what else should we know about the Norwegian influence on Lutheranism here in the United States today?
Well, I think one of the things that strikes me is Norwegian contemporary society and the social welfare state. One of the things in Scandinavia in general that's led to the creation of that social welfare state is, like in Norway, if you travel in Norway today, you go to remote areas. Someone there cannot survive alone. There's a recognition you are part of society, and without the help around you, you're not going to make it. You can't live on an island and catch fish and do nothing else without help from somebody else. Like Lutheran World Relief, for example, is one of the major charity providing emergency assistance all over the world, for example. And so I think this feeling of community and caring for people around you is something that's permeated Lutheranism. And partly it was associated with mission work, and traditionally that was, you know, trying to convert the world to Christianity and preferably to Lutheranism, but that was at least tied to health care and education and other things, and those elements are what are key elements of that movement today, I think.
Marvin Slind is a professor emeritus of history at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. Special thanks to Becky Idstrom and Charlie Langton at the Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum for their help with this segment.